Hello, welcome to the OM podcast, Outwear's podcast all about the mobile industry. My name is Keith Smythe and I'm the lead Android dev here at Outwear, and I'm joined by our lead visual dev and everyone's favourite host, Mr. Peter Talbot.
Lead visual designer, Keith. I'm not a developer by any stretch of the imagination.
Dev. Yeah. Instead of Des, I wrote Dev.
I coded once in high school and I ended up in a Saturday detention because of it.
Lead visual basic dev.
Yeah.
Lead visual designer.
It's good to be back. It's good nice to be back in the hot seat. It's been several years since I've done a podcast.
It feels like it, hasn't it?
Yeah.
It's been a while. I'm tempted to sing. I won't. So today's podcast, in case if anyone's wondering, is brought to you by the letter G and I and O. It's the Google I.O. podcast. And we've got a panel of experts and me and Peter.
Panel of experts?
Panel of experts. Two is a panel.
Two, is it?
Well,
I thought minimum requirements for a panel is three.
What's a smaller version of a panel that we can pick on?
A console.
A console of experts?
A console of experts.
A Nintendo of experts. I have no idea what I'm doing anymore. So to help us bring the noise, we have lead iOS developer, Petse Double Threat Nikolovsky. How are you going?
Hey.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
That's not only his name, that's the next title of the Van Damme movie.
Double Threat.
Pete's mic doesn't sound too nice. It's just running at me.
I do not approve. I am microphone.
Just a bit of insight into the OM podcast.
We have mic stands.
For our listeners, for our hardcore fans, talking about Kent, who is no longer with us. He's still alive.
He's alive, yeah. He's just in France or in the Bosnia podcast. Or something. Yeah.
When they ordered all the microphone stands, there was one dodgy one, and they thought it'd be really funny to put a label on it that said Talbot's mic. So every single podcast I have to wrestle with this dodgy microphone stand, and it just almost fell over.
That was awesome. But you caught it, and it was so smooth no one even noticed. It's trying to fall over again.
But yeah, very funny, Kent. Well done.
Yes, and rounding out our Nintendo of experts, we have Android developer Joel the Crash Test Dummy Schmidt.
Thank you.
Compose yourself, Joel.
Alright, I'm back. Yeah.
Okay. Welcome to your first show.
Thank you. First? It is, isn't
first?
It?
First? Yeah, well, second take of first.
Yeah.
More on that later.
Cool.
So yes, like I said, G, I, and O, we all gathered in the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning for some of us, a bit later for the others, but they didn't get breakfast, so it's their fault. We gathered around a hot barbecue and we had a big work event. We all sat down and watched a delayed telecast of the Google I.O. keynote.
Wasn't it nice?
It was so lovely.
Yeah. I had a good time. Great breakfast, and, by the way.
Yeah.
So who was responsible for that? That
for
would
the breakfast?
Be Captain Long Tongs.
Captain Long Tongs.
And it streamed perfectly on the Chromecast, didn't it?
So glad you brought that up, because it didn't. The Chromecast died and we streamed it over an Apple TV, but I hoped no one noticed. That's good, just redundancy. Everyone's working together. It'll work next time. We'll watch the next WWDC on a Chromecast.
That's
just
right.
To make up for it.
I'm pretty sure they didn't put the presentation together in Google Docs.
What about the Android TV?
That's not out yet, but we'll get to that. I think everyone had a good time. There was lots of cool stuff that was happening. But I noticed that you, Pete, you were jumping up and down in your chair over the new material design stuff.
That is a bold face lie.
Ooh.
Because
is that a designer term?
No, at the time I was like, okay, this is interesting. And didn't really think much of it. And I was like, when are they going to release the Google Pool Noodle? And they never did.
Never happened. Google Vest, we could throw back to that.
Yeah, it didn't happen. I was kind of thinking, oh, right, they've thought about design a bit. And this looks a little superficial. But after looking into it for some time and going through all the guidelines and researching it and everything, now I'm jumping up and down with excitement because it is pretty awesome.
Yeah,
all the material
you've printed
stuff.
Things out. You've put them on the wall.
I was inspired. Yeah, they had a PDF and I sent it straight to the printers and chucked it on the wall. And
so I noticed one of the pages just has some squares in a circle and it says, this is material.
Yeah.
That doesn't explain it to me. Peter, what is material?
What is material? Well, it's kind of hard to explain, but really, to sum it up, Google is actually thinking about design now. So, they've sort of taken all the crazy chaos of all the apps that are out there and all of their apps that are within their ecosystem. They've sort of picked out the best bits and they've boiled it all down to a magic formula.
An egg.
Yeah.
An egg of an idea.
But and they've put together some guidelines for material design, and they've applied rules to material design. So, I mean, it's difficult for me to explain. There was a great article that VentureBeat did, which just sort of grabbed a bunch of designers, got their opinions on it. Yep. So I've got my own opinions, but I think that. So just read out a couple of headlines here. Yeah. So, just a lot of people saying Google have really stepped up their design game. Material designers address problems that designers deal with every day, which is really true.
Uh-huh.
Probably more on that later. And one that I really liked. Others are saying not a massive departure from Google's current design language, which is very true. And that relates to this.
Which you can't move everybody's cheese, can you? You've got to keep some cheese in the same place.
Yeah.
So you can find the basic cheese.
That's exactly
and
right.
And then the fancy cheese can be all over the place. Cheese analogy.
But yeah, I'm just excited about it because it makes my job easier and it will make developers' jobs easier. Because up until this point, designing for Android has been very difficult.
It's, yeah. I
especially
it's
compared
maturing
to,
over time.
To iOS.
Yeah.
Just because it's just so ambiguous, like it's there is just really you're really out there on your own, you're in the dark, and that's why so many Android apps look so different.
Yeah.
And there's why there's no consistency across the platform.
Well,
and it's the same case in iOS. I mean, iOS 7 tried to define a set of rules and parameters in a design language, but it really failed, and people have been interpreting it in the wrong way. And I don't think there's really a third-party app out there that's been developed for iOS 7, which is as good as... Well, I mean, there'd be a handful of them. But even Apple, I think, struggles with that implementation, with the whole transparency thing and everything. So what Google have actually done is gone... For the first time, they've had the luxury of waiting because design hasn't necessarily been a priority for them in the
Google
past.
Google has done an Apple. They've watched everyone else do it.
Exactly.
And now they're doing it.
So they've... They've looked at what Microsoft has done with Metro.
Yeah, it does look quite Metro-like, doesn't it?
Yeah, they've. I'm sure they've like had a look at what Nokia did with Mego, which was never released. But I'm sure some people from Mego worked on the Google stuff. And they've definitely had a look at iOS 7.
Mm-hmm.
And they've sort of boiled it down and sort of, you know, really established principles and frame a good, solid framework that makes it easier to make apps.
Yeah.
And usually it's up to the designer's interpretation, but if you go through these guidelines, it's like, do not do this, do this, only do this. And it's very much like locked down. And so it's nice for me because I have a document to go to push back to clients with and say, well, Google says this, and we might be more likely to get featured if we, you know, do it the right way. And
that's true, yeah.
But saying that, I think Google have really thought about the problems that do face designers, especially service providers like us, where we make apps for
clients
and brands and all that sort of stuff. They've thought about branding, and they've thought about, you know, not everyone's designing a music player, and that seems to be the example that's always provided. It's like,
is that same
have
music
a big,
everywhere.
Beautiful album art and really nice icons. It's, yeah, well, in the real world, we make really complex apps
with music players,
with you know, very, like a lot of stakeholders and a lot of you know, different opinions. So it's really nice to have some structure and some substance. And I think we can spend less time thinking about like tiny sort of details or how things should be implemented, and more time thinking about, you know, user-centric design and thinking about how the user is going to interact with this app.
Okay.
Yeah. So
it's very do you feel that because Google is now almost dictating, you must do this, you must do that. They even have body styles for text and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you feel that your artistic juices are being stop short? Like,
are you becoming redundant, Pete?
Yeah,
a little bit.
Do we need
a little
you
bit.
Anymore?
no, it basically means we spend less time doing mind-numbing layout guides.
So it's to put it to make it like a developer term. It's they've taken the boilerplate code out of design.
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. We summed it up.
Whatever that means.
I understand now.
Yeah, there you go.
The interesting thing about the material design is because Google is so very much omnipresent and they're everywhere and they have such a huge influence on design language and the web. Uh-huh. And they have thought about desktop applications with this, mobile websites, responsive websites, tablet apps, mobile apps, watches. So yeah. they're really trying to capture every screen and define, rules that will work across those screens. And I think in a few years, we might see what we saw in the early days of you would get an Android app and it would look exactly like the iOS app.
Yeah.
I think the opposite is going to be true in about 12 months' time.
Oh, that would be cool.
Unless Apple gets out there and is like, we've got to lock this down. But
they'll do something. I don't think Apple will want to go to that kind of scenario. I think they'll be very, very similar though.
But so if you're designing a desktop application and a mobile website mm-hmm. for like a phone size, Sorry, I just got a notification. Go away, Alex Bird. Okay.
You got your shout out. Stop messaging Peter.
I just got to quit this. Hang on a second.
So unprofessional. That's it. No more design talk for you. I'm going to move on to the next topic.
Wait. Okay, where was I?
You were raging at Alex Bird.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we were talking about how Apple... We're wondering if Apple is going to follow Google.
Yeah, so it always used to be design the iPhone first because it was easier to design. It was more locked down. You had sort of styles you could reference.
Yeah.
But now I think if you're designing all over the place, so you're designing a website, you're designing mobile web, you're designing an Android app, it's going to be easier to make the iOS app look and feel like the Android app. And the styles are quite similar.
Yeah, and I think converging.
Yeah. And they've Google have really embraced
hamburger menus.
The hamburger menu, which is a big one, which is one of those elements which has worked really successfully cross-platform, not only just on mobile devices, but mobile web, and you even see it in like standard desktop
it's
size
everywhere
websites
now,
these days.
Isn't
it? It's really a convention that people are happy with.
I love it.
And that's what material design is all about. It's about establishing rules and conventions that
expected
seem
behavior kind of thing.
Familiar and react the way you expect them to.
Yeah.
So the designer from Google, I'm going to misquote him here, but he said, yeah, at the moment, it's like if you place something down on the table, you don't know if it's going to stay there on the table. This is in the digital world. You don't know if it's going to stay there on the table or if it's going to fly up to the ceiling. And I think that's a very good analogy because it's true. You don't know how stuff's going to react, what the animation's going to do. You don't know where it's going to take you, especially with Android. But we're seeing it a lot in iOS. But so it's establishing sort of like a real world framework for how it reacts. And they're using metaphors like ink and paper, and they're using animation that sort of mimics the real world. And it's really exciting time for us. And I just can't wait to design. Start getting going on it. Yeah,
no, exactly. I can't wait to see what you guys do up for the next round of Android applications. It's a shame I'm not going to be implementing them. Lead the people who implement them now.
But we're definitely going to see, not only will the Chrome of the OS, like the native apps and everything, mm-hmm. not only will they look more consistent and more refined, I think we're going to see a whole new era of Android applications that are coherent, have a consistent look.
Yeah.
And it's because those tools are there for designers and developers. And so, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and the way they're getting that consistent look across the Android and web applications at the moment is the new Polymer suite of tools.
Yeah.
Which I think, Peter, can you tell people what Polymer is? Apart from some sort of sticky glue that sticks things together.
So, yeah, because Google just released the design principles and all the feature implementations for Android that also has been ported even for web browsers. So they provide this library called Polymer, which basically has similar functionality as the it has all the functionality from the Material APIs on Android. Mm-hmm. So the idea is, I assume Google's idea is to have seamless experience no matter which platform you are. So that means either you're on Android or you're on web or you're on iOS running a web page, your mm-hmm. app is always going to look the same and it's going to have the same effects.
Do you think there's going to be a day where you could switch, you could press something in your app and it goes to a web view and then you don't realize it's gone to a web view?
Well, I guess that's their idea, because that's another dot point. I mean, they mentioned in the Google I/O is the integration with Chrome and Android. So pretty much mm-hmm. what's happening now, all your Chrome tabs are going to appear into the recent apps on...
Yeah, the new task switcher.
Task manager. So it means like they're associating a web browser session with an app. So it mm-hmm. kind of gives a hint that probably in future they want to make that integration or even transition to web browsers much more easier and much more seamless. Because if we face it currently, we don't have that support on the mobile devices to run properly HTML apps, which will be 60 frames per second animated. And
They harped on about that quite a bit.
Yeah,
60 frames per second. They really wanted that 60, which I think is what the Hobbit film was recorded at. So I think there's something there, you know.
So I guess
it's good for UI, bad for Hobbits.
It's Peter Jackson's Chrome framework.
Yeah, and so I guess this would give the in future there would be much stronger devices, much more capable of delivering HTML content. So it would be easier for them to transfer. To translate all the apps into HTML without affecting the end users.
Yeah.
And also a really interesting point that they mentioned, you can run Android apps with minor modifications on Chrome OS, which I thought it was a really big deal.
That was he had the simulator almost running on Chrome OS.
Yeah.
But that was on a Chromebook. Do you think... Yeah, Chrome OS. So do you think that's going to come to just a Mac running Chrome or a Windows PC running Chrome?
Yeah, I guess we'll see in future. But I would imagine, because it's the same engine that runs the Chrome OS and pretty much lots of libraries are being reused in the Chrome web browser. So it would be interesting to see if that's going to happen. So that means probably on your Mac you can run Android apps and... Or even on Windows, you can run Android apps in your browser.
All the Android developers are getting really excited. We can run them native, can we? Can we? No more emulator.
What's happening with Chrome OS? Can you install that on any machine, or do you have to have a Chromebook?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I think the main way to get it, at least, is to buy a Chromebook, which is a low-spec laptop.
I think you can install it on some laptops. I'm not sure what's the hardware requirements, but...
It has special.
Yeah, I don't think they're trying to push it like stuff, Android. Right. It's not the solution for everything.
It'd be cool if it was, though.
It's their little ecosystem.
Yeah.
But it's not, I don't know, it's not really geared towards content creation. It's more a content consumption device.
Well, at the moment.
When all this stuff
happens.
Well, I remember reading something about you can write Chrome apps or some sort of script now on a Chromebook. They've opened something up. I kind of remember what. So I probably shouldn't have mentioned it. But you can create something on a Chromebook. Yeah. There you go.
Excellent.
Another interesting as well point was that Polymer also defines lots of UI stars and mm-hmm. guidelines. And it's kind of contradictory to other CSS libraries out there, which are really popular at the moment, like Bootstrap. So...
How's it contradictory? How does it differ?
Well, because they have different approaches, different UI styles, different UI uh-huh. guides, pretty much. And yeah, I've opened up the facts of Polymer, and there's one of the questions: how is this different from Twitter Bootstrap or Adobe's Topcoat? Mm-hmm. And they're just saying that Bootstrap is awesome CSS UI library, and the goals of Polymer are entirely different. And that's it. That's
so Polymer want to. Rule the world. Join everything together and then leave iOS out until they sort of come over into the same camp, maybe. Or maybe there's a new middle ground we don't know about.
Yeah, well, I guess we'll see how iOS is going to focus on future as well.
Yeah, I feel like the next few months after Android L comes out and people start writing Polymer apps and Android L apps are going to dictate kind of where the industry is going to go as far as design and usability, user experience. I think it's, I really want to see where it goes. I want to see who picks it up. I really don't want to see it flop because it looks really cool and it's coming from my camp, the Android camp first. So
I think it is a really bold move by Google to lock down in the stuff with Polymer and the stuff with material design. Because if you look at the web and how the web evolved, and if you look at things that people, like patterns that people recognize, like blue links and, you know, L-shaped content, and now the whole like Bootstrap thing really took off with like parallaxy scrolly websites and everything. All that stuff took so long to evolve because there was no direction. And I think I might be stepping over the bounds a little bit, but I think Google have sort of really fast-tracked that by establishing a common framework that could be applied to everything. And it's not like they invented it. They've sort of just pieced it together from bits that were already using, but assigned rules to how to use those things.
Yeah.
So, I think it's great because, I mean, the web is still broken in terms of that. Like, we have some conventions that, you know, people cling to, but I think that's why it's still so hard to be a great web designer because there's so many different ways to interact. And it just reminds me of those horrible days of Flash websites and where it would just be like this crazy, every link would be like a preloader and a crazy adventure to figure out where the navigation is.
Hey, Homestar Runner was an amazing website.
That was a beautiful website.
That was awesome.
I wonder if it's still up.
I think it is. Yeah. Everyone's just going to go to Homestar Runner now.
Deleted.
I'm going to stop the podcast. I got to listen to Strong Bad again.
The hardest thing, I guess, it would be to see how people are going to adopt and accept this new technology. Because, I mean, everyone is used to use Bootstrap and
Budapest.
Straps. So it's and basically, I mean, from my experience, I can see that developers are pretty lazy and accepting sometimes new things. So,
my mouth is aghast. I'm like, what? You mean the development community as a whole?
Yeah, it's really hard to drive that thing. So, I guess Google has to invest a lot of effort to make sure that this new set of guidelines are being accepted among the web developers as well.
I really feel designers are going to jump at this, and it'll be like a welcome thing because it really addresses a true problem that's out there. If you look at a lot of websites and go to a lot of different apps and mobile, so the most broken point for any digital experience, I would say, is definitely a mobile website.
Yeah.
So like a non-native app mobile website is just a really bad experience. So they've sort of addressed that. And then if you look at a lot of full-scale desktop websites now, a lot of them are using the hamburger menu and they've got a bit of an identity crisis because everyone's designing for mobile first, right?
They're doing a Windows 8 thing where it's got to work on this massive 21-inch monitor and larger.
Exactly.
And then as well, the same code, they want it to work on a phone screen and then a tablet and now your watch. And
to do that, it's really difficult, not only to develop but to design. This is what it's going to look like on a HD TV. This is what it's going to look like on a Retina 15-inch MacBook. This is what it's going to look like on a 7-inch tablet, 10-inch tablet.
Yeah.
This is what it's going to look like on a really cheap, entry-level Android device. This is what it's going to look like on a Pebble or on a Google Wear.
Yeah, you get your 4K TVs coming out and it's going up still.
It's really, really, really hard to do. And I think Google they've noticed that because they have so many products out there and they deal with it on a daily basis.
Well, I think if the designers lead the charge, then the developers have to implement what you design. I mean, so you could just go crazy within reason.
But I hope that Google is providing the tools for the developers to make it easy in terms of like the animations and the interactions and all that sort of stuff. If you want to have any idea what we're talking about, if you go to google.com/design, you can check out the material design guidelines.
It's actually, it's a really good write-up on what material design is. And but the website's also done in material design.
Yeah, a great example because they're eating their own dog food and the website is done in material design, and I've checked it out across like multiple devices, and it performs really well. It's really cool.
Well, you mentioned the the developer tools and if Google's building those up. So I want to talk about developer tools for a little bit because I've got some developers in here. Joel, you wanted to talk about the new...
Hello. Sorry,
good morning.
I wasn't listening.
When Pete talks,
I just kind of drift asleep.
He stops listening when he stops talking.
I have to jab myself with a pin to just wake myself back up again. And
I'm back though. I'm awake.
Just wake myself out of the stupor. You wanted to talk about art.
I did.
And not art like how Pete wants
go
to
on.
Art.
On.
Yeah, so...
I'm interested.
Wait a second. Art. The new runtime it's been... Yeah. Well, it was introduced in 4.4, KitKat for Android. It was made available as an option.
Yeah.
One that nobody uses because switching to art tends to destroy your apps.
Break things.
Yeah.
So what is art? What's a runtime?
What's a runtime?
Google? What's a phone?
Okay, so...
Four?
So Android apps prior to L, when it comes out, they've been running on the Dalvik runtime, which is mainly... it's a just-in-time compilation process, so, which is basically halfway between everything being pre-compiled and interpreting something like a scripting language. So just-in-time compiles the part of the application just before you're about to actually use it. So there's a little bit of overhead.
You tap the button, you tap the little icon, and then it's compiling while it's opening there.
Correct. And so what ART brings, which stands for Android... Runtime, is that correct?
Yep.
Yeah, it's that simple.
Right.
Yeah, ART.
Or fast Android runtime.
As we like to. Do not acronym.
If you're immature.
Yeah. And so what ART brings is ahead of time compilation, which performs that compilation as you install onto the device. Yep. So it improved performance, a lot more responsive for the user when they go to touch a button. There's no compilation required. Yep. You just get what you're expecting straight up. Pretty cool.
that's been Joel's review. I've been reading about a lot of the nitty-gritty of art, mm-hmm. and it's made me very happy and excited because if you've been an Android developer for more than 5 minutes, you would have run into one of two exceptions. There's a null pointer exception. This doesn't fix that. You're still a bad coder. And there's check for null. And there's the out of memory exception,
yeah.
which happens a lot when you're loading
bitmaps. Which is a bit of a fallacy sometimes. It's out of memory doesn't necessarily mean out of memory. It means that you don't have enough memory in one contiguous block.
That's right, yeah.
Available to you. And so this can happen if you're doing a lot of allocations and deallocations during the course of running your app.
Scrolling a list with lots of images. Those images are getting recycled out and brought in. And
you end up with fragmented memory. So you've got, you might only be taking up maybe 5% of your available memory, but you don't have it all in one continuous block.
Yeah, because the old Dalvik needed a bitmap to be allocated in one big block.
Correct. Does ART need that?
I think it does, but ART has a few tricks basically to figure it out.
And one thing that they're going to bring to ART is it's really distracting.
Yeah,
there's a video of Crash Test Dummies up on the screen that Bandy's playing with, and it's really... Is that me?
I'm playing it.
Oh, you're playing
it. It's Pete, yeah.
He's got so bored with you talking.
This is what I do when you're talking.
We're talking about memory fragmentation, Pete.
Yeah, so
this makes us really happy. It means we can load more images.
So one of the things that ART is going to bring, it's not available yet, but they're promising to bring to us is... what's it called? Garbage collection compression during the garbage collection process. So basically, when you clean up a specific block of memory, it compresses that stuff so that all your available memory
is in one big block.
Yeah, it's a lot nicer.
Yeah. Petze's nodding. He knows. Yeah. Petze's going, what?
There's also. I was just reading now.
It's exciting.
You were saying it doesn't help with null pointer exceptions, but it does.
Does it?
Yeah. Well, it.
Oh, please prove
it. It doesn't
wrong.
Help you prevent them, but it gives you a little bit more information when one happens. So instead of just saying null pointer exception occurred at this line, that line might be, this, get that, perform operation on this. It might just be one long string and you're like, somewhere in there, one of those returns null.
Very cool.
So what ART's hoping to provide is improved diagnostic detail where it says null pointer exception, you tempted to write to field int this on a null object reference. So it tells you exactly where you're trying to, or which object was null.
Oh, wow.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I'd like that.
I thought it was
nice. Can we have that, please?
Yeah, well, it's coming, apparently.
It happened sometime after Zygote.
Yeah, and was it
Android joke? Yay!
I once defragged my hard drive.
Well, that's what art does to your memory now. There you go.
Sweet.
So it's like Windows defrag for Android memory.
Now I understand.
So, yeah, that's art. I mean, it's.
That's, I mean, I was. It's turned on by default now. Isn't it? It was. Yeah, it will be by default in Android L forward, and they're promising that as developers, we won't have to make any changes. Everything will just run and work. Do you believe that?
No.
Let's be optimistic now and assume that it will.
I think we're going to do a lot of testing.
Yeah. Well, actually, one of the things that I was a little bit worried about with art is the fact that I'd heard it was... I mean, the emulator is pretty poor in terms of performance as it is, but attaching a debugger to a device running art, apparently the performance was really bad as well. So debugging a running art process is...
I think emulator performance is lower than the bottom of Google's list right now.
Yeah.
As far as, because I remember reading that the 1.0 emulator was really, really fast. And Petsa, you were around it those days. So yeah. And just every release since then, the emulator has slowed down.
It's just stagnated. They built it once. I'm sure it'll be fine.
Yeah, they didn't upgrade it. They didn't work on it.
Yeah.
Actually, the last emulator, which has emulation of the graphic card as well, using HAX, that's pretty good, actually.
Yeah, the x86 and the Haxum, and yeah, using the host GPU on your machine is it helps, but it's still just not the experience I'm after. When I actually am jealous of the Apple simulator, and now I've just gone on recording saying
iOS simulator is actually quite good compared to that one. So
it is good. So yeah, that's what I wanted. I wanted a simulator, and Sundar Pichai doing the whole running your Android apps on a Chromebook made me very happy, because I thought, oh, look, it's there. It's right there. Can I attach ADB to this, please, and start developing against it? I would buy a Chromebook for that, actually. It can be my emulator. Just big Chromebook. Cool, yeah. So, I'm looking forward to art.
Me too.
I think it's actually going to be really good once we've worked out any of the initial niggling issues.
This is cool too. Sorry, I'm just reading like the hard feature page. I'm seeing this. So, hey, look at this!
Oh my god, look at this!
Yeah, but apparently, if you're debugging an art process, you can. There's new debugging options and monitoring options. You can ask how many live instances there are of a particular class, and then you can.
That's cool.
You could filter events like breakpoints for a specific instance. How cool is that? So you can say, I only want it to break on this instance.
That's very cool.
Oh, you can also say he's excited as I am.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Sorry,
Android devs geek out.
Yeah, cool. I'm the iOS team lead now. Yeah. So.
Still one of us, Petse, at heart. So, all right, I'll bring it outside of the development rounds with Joel and I.
No, stay
out.
In here.
All right, let's talk about recycle views. No. So the L preview is out, and we've sacrificed the Nexus 7 tablet. We didn't bring it in today, actually.
Oh, no.
I think it was charging. The Nexus 7s need charging once every 3 months, I think it is. And yeah, it's just, its time has come, so it needs to charge now. Various people in the office have been playing with the Nexus 7 and going through and having a look. And I completely forgot art was on there. It just kind of seems like Android.
Mm.
Seems like it works. I haven't loaded a lot of apps onto it. It's quite a nice experience where they've put the material design in there, and you can do your swiping and things like that.
So in settings?
Settings and calculator.
Yeah.
And is there another place? Is that it?
Calculator looks real nice, though.
It does. It's got a weird little swipey right-hand draw thing, though.
Yeah.
Have you seen that?
But the calculator also works as a website.
Calculator?
Yeah, they have an example on the Material Design website.
Does it really?
Yeah.
Oh, that calculator app.
They have a responsive version of that.
Oh,
of that
okay.
calculator app. And you can chuck it on, you know, like a 4K display, and it still works. Well, probably. Yeah, I haven't tested.
That's what they've been saying. It's meant to do.
Yeah.
The future is now. We're here. We have calculator apps.
But yeah, it looks good. I think it's the first time I've actually considered switching to Android.
Really?
No, really? Not really. That's but, you know, I thought about it briefly.
You thought about it?
Yeah.
Let me just put my gigantic Nexus 4, I almost said 5, next to your tiny little iPhone there. And that phone's a year old. Just, you know, just saying that. It's all scratched up and banged up and things because I keep dropping it. But, you know. That's my baby. Mm. I love it.
It's nice.
So, yeah, I was playing with a couple of the new features in the L preview. And one of the things that really I thought was just, oh, that's a really well thought out idea, is the new notification system. And it ties into Android Wear. And
is that the broken one?
The broken notification? No, notifications do work on the tablet.
Oh, I thought when you dragged it down, you had to like drag it twice.
The little, what's that guy called? The shade? The drawer?
What are you talking
about? Yeah, it's, that thing works differently now. So the shade is, it used to be you can swipe down with one finger and the whole shade would come down. If you did it with two fingers or press the button, it would swipe down as the quick settings with the big giant buttons where you can turn off wireless, etc. But now it's, you swipe down and you get this really small notification shade, and then you swipe down again and the quick settings are tacked onto the bottom of it.
Yeah, so the broken one, that's
weird. It's, yeah, it feels, yeah, it's weird because when you swipe too far, that little extra guy with the quick settings, you can see it peeking out. So it feels like it should, if you kept swiping down, it would open up as well.
It teases
you. But it doesn't, yeah.
Everybody that I've seen use it like pulls their finger all the way down to the bottom and off the bottom of the tablet. Yeah. And they're wondering why it's not
they're looking for more tablet to swipe on to try and get that other thing out that just peeked out and said, hello. But no, it's not there. It crashes a few times. I notice in settings when you try and do things, it just crashes. Mm. So I think that's a good PSA. You know, don't load a developer preview on your daily driver devices. We have test devices, so we can steal them and put toys on them, plug them in and wreck them. So yes, notifications. Petso, have you had a play with the new notification system?
I did a little bit, but yeah. I think it was broken experience with that double swiping for me as well.
It's so. All about the double swipe. What about, did you ever see them appear on the lock screen?
No, I didn't.
No? Because, yeah, that's the new thing that they thought out with notifications now, because it puts the notifications on the lock screen, which causes a problem in that, what if I don't want my private notifications to show up on my lock screen where everyone can see them? And by extension, on my watch or on my outward-facing Google Glass that I have bought. So they've got notification levels now where you can set, you as the app writer can set your notification level to be private, which is cool. So then it still shows up on the lock screen that you have a notification, but it'll say something redacted, like instead of the actual text message about, you know, your doctor results or anything like that.
Your Tinder matches.
Things like that. It'll just say you have a message, which I thought was actually, it was one of those things that it's so simple when you think about it. You're like, oh, why didn't they do that in the first place? And it's like, oh, it's one of those things that just hit me.
Has anyone been burned before in the past by publicly viewable notification?
I've had my password show up in an email when I was streaming to a screen, but that was on a computer.
That's, yeah, but I'm talking about like if you're air playing during a presentation in a boardroom and a friend of yours sexts you something. Anyone had that?
No, personally. I try to be on the other side of that. Like when I know, for example, you're in a meeting.
You're the perp.
I'll send you something dirty.
I look forward to that.
Plus, there's no air playing on Android.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, we can't really cast yet. Actually, it's coming.
Yeah, it is interesting. Yeah, they mentioned that it's coming. And it was kind of funny because they said you can actually cast your Android device to a Chromecast device, but all the presentations that were done were actually with cables. All the phones
they
were
plugged everything in.
Yeah. That's fair enough, though.
Yeah, it is scary. Yeah. There's a lot of radio frequencies and things going on at a conference.
There is no way you would risk that.
Yeah, that's their excuse. They need one that's so robust it'll work at a conference. If they can get one to work at a conference flawlessly.
I can see Apple doing that. And we're using it to stream right now. And then all the Apple fanboys just start passing out in the aisles.
Oh, my God.
Everybody starts to DDoS the whole system. Like, oh, my God. Let's take it down. Let's be funny. So, all right. I want to talk about what moments in the whole Google I/O presentation stood out for everybody. So I think everybody's got something in mind.
I'm going to say it. We're all thinking it. It was a big moment.
Pizza, tell us a story.
Pizza watch.
Whoa. That was a
delicious
one. That was good.
It was a defining moment.
They had a pizza watch. That's all that needs to be said.
Yeah. It was a Moto 360. Which hasn't been released.
Yeah, Moto 360 round watch. They were ordering food with a app on the watch?
Yeah, in
20 or was it
seconds.
Just showing alerts, or did the whole process happen? Yeah. Yeah, very cool.
Well, it's a very closed up experience. It's you can order the same pizza you ordered last time.
So
if you want a different pizza, yeah. No, you have to go pizza phone.
So neckbeard basement dwellers everywhere will be stoked with this application. You don't even have to go to the effort of taking your phone out of your pocket. You can just mash your finger on your watch face, and then pizza will be delivered to your door. But it showed the pizza on the watch, and it looked pretty. I think I just had all these nostalgia feels coming back from Ninja Turtles or something.
It looked
very delightful. I gave it a standing O, and that was clearly the highlight of the entire conference. Forget material design. Forget polymer. Forget
everything.
Google
pizza watch.
Google Wear. Google Auto.
So for you, they could have just stood up and just dead silence for 10 minutes straight, and everyone's going, "What's going on? What is all this?" And then they just go, "Pizza watch."
Yeah,
and that was it. They'd have you.
I would have liked to see sort of like a Silicon Valley. What's the guy's name? The funny guy with the weird beard, Borkman. Style present like done by him. You know? Like, for years, man has wanted pizza, but before we had to use the phone. Whoa. Now, pizza watch. That would have been great. It would have been funnier than Apple's hair jokes and Google's. What was the running gag that had the double-ended
Google
peanut,
Plus? Was that
peanut butter jar? What was that?
Oh.
I think they screwed that up.
That was a weird thing. It kind of got a few references about
And they're like, so you're designing a double-ended peanut butter jar. Nobody wants it. And everyone was like, okay, what is that? And then they were going back to it like it was this really lame callback.
I can't quite access my double-ended peanut butter jar.
Please stop doing that. If anyone from Google is listening to this, or Apple for that reason, which they're probably not, but
my god, could you imagine?
Comedy is not your forte, stop doing it. And the same could be said for me. So I will stop talking now.
Well, it's okay, we're small.
It's not a huge, you know, worldwide developer conference or this, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
This is a podcast with three listeners,
and we just
one of them's my mum.
Yeah, so we just lost all our neck bearded pizza ordering listeners.
I'm
as
just
well,
joking. So. My mum doesn't listen to the podcast. I know the neckbeard fedora guys are our core audience, so I really screwed it up.
We love your neckbeards. So, Joel.
My podcast.
There was a low there at the double-ended, what was it, peanut butter jar?
Peanut butter jar.
Well, that made me feel bad, but something that made me feel really good was I think his name was Andy. Andy was sitting there in
Andy, our producer?
Not that one.
Were you there?
He doesn't instill the same feelings of contentment that I felt watching this Andy sitting in the cockpit of a car, stripped down car, when they were
Kia Rio, I believe.
Really,
the new Android Auto's capabilities, and his role was to sit there and use Android Auto.
Auto, yeah.
And he did, and he was having a fantastic time pretending while he was driving.
So it's happy.
I've never seen anyone so content.
He went method.
He did.
It was like watching Inside the Actors Studio.
Do you think he's been driving that car all week?
Around the San Fernando Valley, taking in the sights, and he's brought that to the stage. And it was, I'll tell you what it is, it's inspiring.
He took me to the moment, I feel. You know, I was there.
I
was in that car with him.
Mm. It looked like the car was powered by his own smugness. It was like the ultimate green energy. It's just like, because there's so much smugness just emanating out of this guy's aura.
It's like a South Park episode.
Yeah, that's right.
Thanks. I wish you did that right at the end. Thanks, Android Auto. Thanks. That was awesome. I really thought that was one of the high points of the whole thing.
So what do we think about Android Auto?
Android Auto.
So obviously, playing a bit of catch up with Google CarPlay.
Yep.
Is that what it's called? Did I just say Google CarPlay?
If you want to know, Apple, I was distracting you. So if you want to know, Apple CarPlay.
Apple CarPlay. Yeah. So similar sort of deal. It's like, is it a second screen or is it like a...
It could be either. It could either be your car's screen or your phone screen.
Actually, they were promoting it like... because, you don't switch your car every few years, like you do it with your device. And they wanted to bring a dumb experience within the car, which will be just a presentation and sort of way of communicating with your senses in your car to provide that protocol, unified protocol. And then you can use your device, which will be always the latest one, hopefully.
Please.
Yeah, you will buy a new one every 2 years and you're going to have new features, new functionalities. And
which is the same as the CarPlay thing, right? They're both very similar models.
It's automotive manufacturers are not good at making software, whereas Apple and Google
But they can put a screen in
software.
Your dashboard and they can give you a jack in. Yeah.
They can
and
define
then your phone does
sort of
all the work. But it's the CarPlay and the Google Auto is about defining how the things plug into each other and how
So these are competing frameworks, right? We're not going to be able to get a car that's both CarPlay and Android Auto.
Let me ask you this, Joel. Let me ask you a question. Have you ever had a car that's had a tape deck and a CD player in it?
Oh, my God.
Mind blown.
Which one's the tape deck and which one's the CD player in your analogy?
I would say Android is like an 8-track, so soon to be obsolete.
that you're considering.
Yeah. I don't know. I can't see like why they wouldn't offer that.
Well, who signed up for the Apple one? It's
within a family, you know, the husband might have an Android phone and the wife might have the other husband might have a
that's very
open mind. PC. We're so progressive.
So I can see it being really frustrating, even if it's just like a factory option releasing. What would you like, Android or iPhone?
Yeah, that would be weird when you go in there. Instead of what color car would you want, what sort of gearbox, etc. What sort of phone do you have?
Mm.
Yeah, I actually would make my decision based off
I bet
that
you the iOS one would be more expensive.
Well, Ferrari signed up for the Apple... Yeah, and Auto. And Mercedes, I almost said Apple TV, but I believe it's Ferrari.
Yeah. it looked like Google had cornered a lot of brands, but I'm not sure if they had just got GM and that is pretty much every car.
Well, they've got
brand,
VW.
Or Fiat or whatever.
So I'm just... I went back to my car and I started touching everything in my car because I have a Golf. So
does that mean
it doesn't work yet?
I mean, they've got Lamborghini and...
It means they've got Audi.
I think they've got...
Yeah, they got
Bugatti. Lamborghini has their own stuff.
Korean cars as well.
Crazy. Yeah, they had Kia
Hyundai, Toyota.
I think they've backed the right manufacturers. I'm not sure.
There's a bit of. I mean, I think they've
gone very Android.
I mean, the hardest thing would be because both iOS and Android focus on different communication technologies. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure how's that going to be. At the moment, they were saying that you plug it via your USB cable, but in future. They mentioned in one of the DevBytes videos that they're planning to use Wi-Fi Direct, which is available at the moment only on Android devices, and iOS doesn't support that. They're mainly focusing on Bluetooth LE. So there's that diversity that and within the technologies that could cause the be limited only to one or another.
Yeah, it sort of feels a bit like a format war, doesn't it? Yeah. I think all we need now is for Sony to come up and be like, we've got one too.
Samsung release a Tizen version of your car. It runs longer on battery. Exactly. If I have
it's
a
like
car
the
with
Blu-ray of cars.
No, go away, Sony.
What was the other one from Blu-ray? It was Blu-ray and
HD DVD.
Ah, okay. Yeah, well, obviously Blu-ray won that one. But yeah, I want to get a car with both Apple
throwback
and Google.
Podcast of 1997.
Throwback podcast. Do you remember VHS and A-Track? Awesome. So, Pete, what was your standout moment from the presentation?
My standout moment was Android One, world domination.
That was right at the start, wasn't it?
Yeah, so basically they said, we're going to dominate the world pretty much from now on. So just to give a little bit more explanation, what's Android One?
It's not as good as Android 2. It's better than Android 0. Nowhere near Android 3.
So it seems like Google wants to grab the other 90% of the users on the planet, which cannot afford having a smartphone.
Mm-hmm.
So basically they're trying to dictate not just the software, which is the Android operating system, also the hardware that it's going to build with contract with some of the Indian, I thought, Micromax.
Yeah, Micromax manufacturers. They're releasing a few phones in India. And
So basically, they said they're going to produce a phone that costs less than $100, which means that, they're going to dominate the world with those devices.
You couldn't make it for that price.
It's like,
my dad said that. I'm like, Dad.
Did he really?
Dad, first, you don't even know the first thing about making microprocessors. It's like you have to make a factory do that. It's like you couldn't make it for that price, couldn't buy the materials.
I love these insights into your life. It's so good.
What's good about these devices is that, yeah, since Google is dictating the hardware and software, that means they're going to be Nexus branded devices, so they're going to get the latest updates
internally. They don't actually have Nexus on the device, so they're not literally branded.
They're not branded, but yeah,
they're getting the updates,
they're getting the latest updates.
Hardware's already spoken for.
It would be much more better experience, I guess, buying.
I actually want one for here. I want them to just go, oh yeah, Australia is a third world country, let's, you know, they can't afford phones over there, let's make some nice cheap phones for them.
And they're going like to be tailored as well based on the requirements of the general audience. So that means in some countries two dual SIMs and stuff like that. But you're not going to get the latest hardware features like the fastest processors and the best screens out there, but you're still going to have Android experience. Which will be...
you can get that Google experience Nexus owners love.
Dual SIM phones are also handy for people in, you know, developed nations as well, whether you're a cheating husband or a wife or a...
spy.
Or you could be a drug dealer.
Yeah.
But also if you're going outside of the country, I mean, I didn't
even think of that.
Yeah, so that's...
that's a practical use.
Yeah, that's really practical because you want to be available on your cell phone from your country, but also usually when you go to another country, you buy another SIM.
That would be super awesome.
No, yeah. I want dual SIM. Can I have dual SIM?
Yeah, you can.
I just carry around a paperclip. It's not the best.
Just quickly switch SIM out.
I feel like Google have picked up the gauntlet or the baton and filled the gaping void that Nokia has left. Because I remember when I was at Nokia, it was all very much... like, let's make phones for the third world, and it's all about Bricker and developing countries and affordable phones. And but it was all very much like just the phones that weren't running Android. It was like this really ghetto OS, and it just wouldn't...
So it wasn't
like,
even
people
Symbian
wouldn't want to use it. Yeah, yeah. Even... yeah. So, and then because Nokia has been bought by Microsoft, and now they're playing a different game. They're going for like this really sort of high-end thing. They still have a few sort of entry-level phones, but they've totally just left all the, you know, like the sub $50 phone market.
The indestructible Nokia that costs as much as one shoe.
And that was their mission for many years, was to just corner that whole market. But
I was the Symbian team lead. Remember
that's right. You were
a throwback episode
for an hour. So I mean, it's good to see that someone's actually, you know,
taken up the gauntlet.
Picked up the gauntlet.
I picked it up.
And those users will be getting probably a better experience than a lot of people that are on, say, Samsung devices.
Yeah,
you know, because Nexus is kind of the gold standard of. Of Android.
Oh, I love Nexus.
That was something I was a little bit disappointed that was missing from this I/O was
a new Nexus.
Either a new Nexus or the Android Silver or something along those lines.
Down on hardware stuff. Yeah. And speaking of stuff that was missing, Google Glass. I think there was a lot of explorers in the audience that looked very bewildered. Like, what about us? I've got this computer strapped to my face. I'm telling my friends it's going to be the future. What happens now? And then no mention of it at all.
Nothing in the keynote, no.
Nothing. And then, I don't know, I think they've taken a step towards watches.
Yeah, well, the different wearables.
Were there any sessions focused on it? Any of the other sessions that were focused on
design? There was a few designing for wearables and design, and you could see in the image, I didn't watch the video, the guys were wearing Google Glass. So I'm sure they did something for that.
The explorers did get a new version of Glass released very quietly, maybe a couple of days before I/O.
But doesn't that make that their $1,500
it does make
Glass
it
redundant?
Completely redundant. I think the prior upgrade, these people that had one of these early versions of Glass got that upgrade for free. But these guys, unfortunately, you're going to have to pay again.
Yeah,
if they want the new version.
I feel like the watch is kind of taking Glass's like storm away, because Glass was this wearable thing. Look, you don't need to take your phone out of your pocket. You just have to wear this computer on your head.
Yeah.
But the watch is more. While the watch is even currently are really quite big, it's much more subtle.
And it looks a lot nicer, this first iteration as well of the watches, than the first iteration of Glass, which looks very prototypey. And even after treatment by some top designers, I can't name them, DVF.
Yeah, I watched her.
Diane von.
Yeah, something. The
Jimmy.
The redhead. Holloway? And I say that because she's flying the flag for redhead designers everywhere.
Do you just give other redheads just the nod?
Props.
Yeah. Walking past them on the crosswalk.
Conan O'Brien, the guy from Happy Days, Ronald McDonald.
Richie Cunningham.
just really successful redheads. QE2. The queen, not the boat.
Are we just the matches? We're just gonna keep naming redheads.
Let's do it. She had. There's a video of her explaining the industrial design for Glass, and she's like, just there's a real lack of design speak, and I really like that. She's like, yeah, we had to put a computer on your head, and we just shoved it in the back, and it looks way better like that. You're like, yeah, good girl. Awesome.
I mean, there were no robots at the
they were,
either.
They were running security. They were pretty quiet.
Oh, they were handling the protesters and things.
Yeah. But you're right.
They were robots. Killbots.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Speaking of computers you strap on your face. And
face
head.
Computers?
Cardboard. Did you guys
cardboard
see that?
Cardboard you strap
very,
onto your head.
Very,
it's very quiet.
At the end of the keynote, we have this new thing. It's called cardboard, and they didn't really explain it. And then later it was revealed that it is a virtual reality headset mounting device, cardboard box type thing. My cat would really love it because she's a big fan of cardboard boxes. But I'm pretty keen to get my hands on this thing. It wasn't available
for your cat.
She's a big gamer. She'll love it.
It looks like it folds up and looks like a cardboard version of the Oculus Rift.
It does. Yeah, yeah.
What does it do though?
It's like
it has like a slot for your phone. And
yeah, it's a bit of cardboard. It's a bit of origami magic that you fold together, and it comes with two plastic lenses. And then
it's an activity.
First of all, we're building stuff. Yeah, things to make
fun.
It do. It's great. So you put your phone in the front, and then on your phone it displays like a split screen, so you got like the stereoscopic vision that you would see in an Oculus Rift, for example.
And does it work with all screen sizes, or is it clever enough?
I don't know.
I'm asking you questions that someone who's got it in their hands would know, but I thought you'd ask you anyway.
But yeah, so you got the plastic lenses so you can see the screen really close to your face, because if you put it up like it's as close to my face as now, you can't focus. It has to be, you know, it's like
a
number one or number two. I feel like I'm the optometrist.
Visual
right now.
Cues don't really work in a podcast. Yeah.
Oh, this is just audio.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, that camera is actually just for me.
I got dressed up for nothing. So the lenses allow your eyes to focus on the screen at like extreme close-up distances.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think my mum will like it, because she was always like, you get square eyes if you sit that close to the TV.
Actually,
you go blind, and I'm pretty blind right now. So
I always remember my parents used to tell me, just don't sit so close to the TV, you'll ruin your eyes and all the rest of it. And I found myself the other day, I've got a 4-year-old son, and he picked up my wife's tablet and he was watching something on it. And I said, don't put that too close to your eyes. Oh my God, what have I done?
What has happened?
I just walked out of the room just shaking my head, just going, oh no.
Well, soon your child will be wearing this thing on his face, and your kids will look like the kids out of Back to the Future.
Yeah. Do you think our prospective kids and descendants will look back on this Google I/O and go, this is where, you know, the design Paramount started. This is where it all happened. From here on, everything looks the same.
I think they'll look back to the protesters and be like, if only he had got through and assassinated the guy in the car, then we would have avoided Judgment Day.
It was John Connor. So Google Skynet. I think that's the biggest takeaway from here, I think.
Yeah.
Google could go Skynet, and it could be really well designed. And you wouldn't know if it's Google Skynet or a web Skynet, or even maybe Apple Skynet.
How would you like to die? Confirm action.
We'll kill you. We will kill you at 60 frames per second.
So the people at the conference got the cardboard box, the Google Cardboard, it's called, which is a cool name. And you can't get it anywhere. And they recommended you could print out the cardboard and make your own, and they show places where you could source lenses, and all the lenses got sold out in the world. So I feel sorry for anybody who needs those lenses.
I feel like they're from Silicon Valley, just looking at lenses, going, "See these? They're all lenses on every cardboard lenses. Buy lens stock. Do it."
There you go. So you couldn't do it, but the company Dodo Case, who make really cool iPad cases.
Not the crazy internet company.
No, internet that flies.
And, enough said.
I really hate that jingle. It's really bad. For our international listeners, this will be over shortly, so just bear with us.
Dodo is in...
Yeah, so Dodo Case, you could buy the finished product from them. So we've ordered one for the office.
Have we?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Jerem ordered one.
Right. You sent the email out to just bully someone into buying
somebody one. Buy this. And sure enough, someone did. So thank you.
Sure enough, Jerem. You'll be on a few
podcasts. I was just like looking for early adopters, of which we have several.
Early suckers.
So we'll talk about that in a future podcast and how it compares to the Oculus Rift Dev Kit 2. Pretty much free. One's $500. So
exactly.
Interesting move, Google. Take that, Mark Zuckerberg, and your Rift.
It was very Google. Yeah, I liked it. I think that's a show, guys.
I think, my phone just made a noise.
Yeah, Pete's phone made a noise. So that's a show. Thank you very much, everyone, for coming in. Thank you, Andy. I'll thank you first this time. All went well.
I just want to send a quick shout out to Kent.
Yes, shout out to Kent, wherever you may be.
Hi, G'day. Kent. You're probably somewhere in the Mediterranean right now.
Sleeping in a box.
And we would appreciate your feedback regarding the podcast that has taken us 4 hours to record.
Indeed. Or even if you're not Kent, send us feedback. We'd love to.
Oh, know. No.
No,
if you're not Kent, do not send us feedback. Keep it to yourself. Just for free. God.
And I want to hear if anyone thinks that their favorite host is not Pete Talbot and actually me. I'm looking at you, Lily, my wife. Send me feedback. Yeah. She won't. She will say, no, Pete's way better than you.
Just email us your feedback so I can delete it.
Yep.
Instantly.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Patsy. Thank you for coming in.
No worries.
Enjoy yourself.
Yeah, it was really interesting.
Good fun. Your first time you came in as your Android dev team lead, iOS team dev team
lead. Well, I don't feel sorry jumping the trains from Android.
I don't
Android
even know
to
you
iOS.
Anymore.
I was expecting more from Google. I didn't saw the self-driving cars on the
That's
keynote.
That's true. So we're not going to start off talking about that, though, but that is true. Yeah. Well, we'll have to do one when the self-driving cars comes out.
Yeah.
No worries. Thank you, Mr. Joel.
You're welcome.
You got through your first podcast?
It was great. I enjoyed it immensely. Are we still doing, are we still trying to get people to follow us on the Twitter?
On the Twitter? Would you like to do the Twitter handle? Go on. Throw to Joel. Twitter.
So what do I do?
Our handle.
The
series is
at outwear.
And then you have to spell outwear.
OUTWARE.
Very good.
Yeah, not like the clothes. This isn't a clothes company.
Although the future.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, co-host Peter Talbot.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Keith.
Awesome. Very well. Okay. Join us next time. Bye-bye.